Ours to Protect. Brought to you by Radio Kerry, the IBI, and funded by Comisión na Mban with a television licence fee. For more info, check out ourstoprotect.ie.
I'm at School Railton Imodana, an all-boys national school in the centre of Listowel town, who have been carrying out biodiversity work around the school grounds for the last 3 years.
Yeah, ever since we got a new principal, Mr. Quirk, there's been a lot more like planting flowers and planting trees and stuff. And he likes like nature, and he really wants to grow more plants and grow trees and stuff.
Since Mr. Quirk became the principal in 2021, there's loads of he made sure there's loads of no-mow zones, plants growing everywhere.
And we've just become a better biodiversity school.
I was given a tour by some of the fifth class boys to see all of the incredible biodiversity work they've been carrying out in an urban area.
A few years ago, we got the fields, we got it paved, and every morning we do regulation and we can always see all the plants and the no-mow zones just thriving, and it makes you happy just to see them.
We started with a tour of the sensory garden, which has been a hive of activity.
There is the hawthorn tree over here. Mm-hmm. It has loads of nice flowers, and those flowers will eventually turn into berries which the birds will eat.
Excellent, so you're kind of creating a big sustainable environment around here.
Yeah, we have loads of plant life here to down in our field. We have loads of trees to keep our environment healthy and everything. We like to keep our wildlife here, especially pollinators like bees, birds and bats. We try to keep them alive. A lot of pollinators are going extinct, so we'd like to keep them alive as long as we can.
The boys have been learning how to cultivate native trees.
They are birch trees. I think I remember Mr. Quirk telling us we're growing here.
Perfect, so these are little saplings.
Yeah, they're saplings.
Excellent, so from here, how many roughly are there? There's what?
I'd say roughly 25 to 30 saplings.
Amazing. So all of these are going to become birch trees.
Yeah.
And what are you going to do when they're big enough now?
Like put them in a pot or put plant them in the fields of trees at the back of the field.
But how difficult is it to grow native trees? Let's talk to one of the experts. Meet Alan.
My name's Alan Balfe. I'm the Wildlife and Education Coordinator here at Tralee Bay Wetlands. So that involves dealing with schools, bringing them out, we do leave and search biology courses here. We do National School Nature Days, going out planting trees. It's a bit of luck, really, growing them from seed. Some of our native plants, like the oak, they actually need to go through, it's called scarification. They need to they need to be frozen, because naturally Ireland goes through a winter. They know after we get lots of frost, the seeds are safe enough to germinate. And again, some of them take years to start germinating if you just leave them in the ground. There's some good places that will sell native provenance seed. Wild Oak, they're in Clare, I'm pretty sure. I suppose the biggest thing is not to buy trees if you don't know they're not grown in Ireland from native seeds, because we've seen what happens with the ash dieback that came in from another country because we're importing all that stuff. There's another disease called fire blight, and that's affecting the hawthorn. So all the trees that are out now in the hedges that are all white now, they're the hawthorn. There's a disease now coming around and that's affecting them. And again, that was imported. But if we're growing our native seeds, the trees here are adapted to the diseases that's around here.
The boys have been busy growing and cultivating their own vegetable patches.
Well, we have onions growing here. We started growing them there how long ago, maybe a few weeks ago. And we had them in our small little pots and we just moved them out here to the beds a few days ago.
The peas we have here, we started growing them in our classroom in small pots. And then we started to move them out here. And we just buried them a bit and then got a bit of the bamboo. And let them grow up the bamboo so they stay strong.
I took a few peas home over the Easter, because if we didn't bring them home they'd die, and I put them in my Nana's greenhouse, and they grew really, they grew lots.
Why is it important to grow fruit and vegetables locally?
You'd be surprised what we can grow. Obviously, you know, there's cabbages and spuds, which are the main things everyone thinks of. But we also have, you can grow loads of carrots, onions. There's a plant called pak choi. I think it's like a Chinese lettuce. Asparagus, artichokes, curly kale, strawberries. Yeah, so there's a whole loads of garlic is a great one, because you can eat the leaves off the garlic. Everyone just gets the bulb. And then you've got all the herbs, sage, rosemary, lavender, thyme, oregano, mints. So there's a whole pile of stuff here. And we teach that with our junior certs and even certs. Because, where was I? I was in Dunn's and I picked up a packet of chives and they came from Ethiopia. So with the carbon side of things, if you have to ship stuff in from Ethiopia, it's a huge carbon cost of that. And chives need water, which you have lots of, and sunlight. So it's very easy to grow these things here, but we just don't.
A normal zone is basically a part of a patch of grass that you don't mow for a while. You leave the flowers grow naturally, and the flowers are there for the bees to pollinate.
No, the no-mow zone in our school is very, very big. It's like the width of a football pitch, but not the height. We cut it recently, but it's usually like 2 foot tall, and there's loads and loads of like little wildflowers like the dandelions and those big grass things with the seeds at the top. There's like they're really big, and it's just there's loads of flowers.
We also have many no-mow zones here, but we're just standing at the biggest one here. We have multiple in the sensory garden, and we have some at the front gate as well.
But why are no-mow zones so important?
It's extremely important to have no-mow zones because we need pollinators, and most of our like cereal and different types of foods we need for our food, and if we had no mow zones, there'd be no pollinators and we'd have no food.
Here's what Alan had to say.
A big thing that's come in the last 50 years is mowing your lawn down to the base and having it very, very artificially green nearly. But the problem is wildlife doesn't respond to that. You get very little amounts of wildlife in those areas. And you can nearly see it with the birds. If you ask anyone who's over, you know, 30, you can nearly see the decrease in the population of birds. And I suppose a lot of people are creeped out by bugs, but the bugs are the things that feed the birds. So you need a mixture of flowers, the wildflowers. Again, stuff people don't like the daisies and the dandelions. They're really important because different animals eat different things. So something might eat a daisy that won't eat grass. And then you have the follow-on effect of the flowers that are on these things. So you get lots of, the bees would be the biggest one. They're coming in, getting their pollen. And then after that, the daisies go to seed. And then you get the birds coming in and they're eating the seeds off the daisies, while also eating the other little animals that are feeding off the daisies. And that's only just, you know, there's more. There's other plants called knapweed and the clovers. So there's a lot actually in the lawn, but it's just giving it the chance to grow. Once you kind of stop mowing the lawn too often, you do get more birds coming in, and you mightn't have a lot of diversity year one, but in the birds' droppings, that when they start coming in, they'll start bringing the wildflower seeds in their droppings. So year two, you might find other things popping up. It might be a 5-year thing before you see a lot, but you will see a lot more birds coming in very, very soon anyway. They respond, like nature responds very quickly to these changes. The National Biodiversity Data Centre, they're the people who collect all the statistics on Irish nature. They're saying to mow it, if you could mow it nearly once a month, and maybe even have some areas where you only mow once a year. And that's going back to making hay meadows, because some of our longer term flowers take a year to actually go into flower. But it's up to yourself. If the grass is really strong and you don't want to leave it for a whole year, you could try mowing it every month. I know we do it here where we actually mow a border around the long grass, and it just makes it look like it's kept. instead of letting everything go wild, and then people have this thing where we've just left everything go messy, if you do a small border around it, it looks better.
Biodiversity is good for the food chain because lots of bugs live in the no-mow zone, and then the birds eat the bugs, and then the birds get eaten by some other animal like a cat or something, and then it all starts again.
And it helps to give food to us that we normally take for granted, like cereal. You don't think how much nature has to do to make them.
Josh is very right. We used to take biodiversity for granted, especially our younger classes. They would think, oh, this is not important, just tear it down. But when they get older, they'll realise that if we don't have this, we could all lose our food sources, our health and everything.
This no-mow zone is a very good place for all the bugs because it's a safe place for them to live.
The no-mow zones are good for the bees, because if we had no bees, we'd all be wiped out.
I got a tour of the school grounds, where a big emphasis has been placed on identifying native trees and plants.
The hawthorn tree is also known as the fairy tree. It's the mythology around it is if you cut it down, fairies will come after you. They'll lead you into a fairy ring. If you ever sat there, you'd have to wear your jumper inside out to leave, actually, to become invisible to them. It's a very native tree to Ireland, and it's really good for the birds.
And what does Alan think about this?
It's good to plant a variety of trees. So if you look for our native ones, like the hawthorn would be the biggest one, because that supports a whole variety of other insects. So big initiative is to try and help the bees, but you're also helping all the other insects that aren't being promoted, like the caterpillars and stuff like that. But yeah, hawthorn is a big one. So you're meant to try and have enough nectar and pollen from March till the end of September, really. So willow would be your first one, then blackthorn, then I think you're into your hawthorn, and then rowan and elder. And again, they all have uses. Like the blackthorn, you get sloes out of, which you make sloe gin out of, which is my favourite. And elder is, again, another one. You can make lovely cordials from the flowers.
We have the rowan tree, also known as the mountain ash. The rowan tree actually has a bit of mythology itself. It's known as healing, has healing properties and everything.
Sometimes at assembly, our principal, he tells us to find these flowers that are grown on the school ground, and whenever you find one, you have to go up to him.
And, like, what kind of flowers would he be talking about?
The last one is bluebells, as they recently started growing.
There's speedwells. There's the one that we found last week. I think it's called like a mouse-eared cheekweed or something.
When our principal took us for a walk around the school, we found a little tiny sapling that came from an acorn that maybe a bird dropped or a different animal, and now it'll turn into an oak tree.
Amazing. So that's, and you've got another one there. What do you think this is?
Oak tree.
So how can we identify these trees?
There is keys you can get, identification keys. If you go on to the National Biodiversity Data Centre, they have these. They're called swatches. They're these little booklets, and they're very simple. They'll show you which leaf belongs to what plant.
What can you do to increase biodiversity in your own garden?
This is when all the worker bees are coming out now. The queens have made their nests. They're going to stay in the nest now. They've done their job. They're going to stay in and lay eggs. So all their workers have just hatched. They're coming out now, so this is the survival mode of the hive, essentially, because the queen bee emerges in early March, February. She has to get loads of resources, so your dandelion and your willow are really important for her because they're the first ones to go into flower. So she's looking after her larvae, and then once they hatch, she stays in the nest. They come out, they're getting all the supplies, but there's only a few of them now. So what happens is you see really big bumblebees around March and April, and then you see really tiny bees coming around this time of year. And they're tiny because it's only the queen feeding them. So every laying now, they'll get bigger and bigger and bigger. And so this is when there's only a few of them out, but they need a lot of pollen and nectar to get the next generation out.
70% of all plant species rely on bees and other insects to pollinate for them, so they can produce more plants. The food we eat, like Weetabix and cereal and all the stuff that comes from crops, we wouldn't be able to eat that without bees.
Without that, all the all the shops would be empty.
Our wildlife is very specific. And again, it's our natural heritage.
I share that like we could have more birds here in our school and more wildlife around Ireland.
Ours to Protect. Brought to you by Radio Kerry, the IBI, and funded by Comisión na Mban with a television licence fee. For more info, check out ourstoprotect.ie.